All right, we're back on Third String Podcast, and this time we're going to wrap up our Major League Baseball previews, this time covering the American League and National League West, and this is just in time for MLB opening day, which is right around the corner on Thursday. And this is great news for just about all of us, but Pete, your Washington Nationals, I saw, are not going to be opening their season on Thursday because they're already rained out. We know they were supposed to be playing in Cincinnati, I think, and the game was canceled.
Disappointing start. Yeah, disappointing start for the Nationals. You know, opening day always has to be in Cincinnati at the Great American Ballpark, so a little disappointing, but we'll have enough games on the slate here on Thursday to make up for it, and they'll get back to it on Friday. So a little bit of a downer, but not too big, because we still have 162 at least in front of us.
That's right. Yeah, we certainly do. And Ishan also on the line with us. Ishan, how are you doing over in Chicago?
Yeah, everything's good. Since people will probably be listening to this after opening day has happened, I just want to say that I totally called whoever randomly hit 3 home runs.
There you go. Perfect.
Nailed it.
Yeah, you crushed it. It's just like what we talked about last time, how you've called 27 of the last 16 Chicago upsets, right?
Yep.
All right, perfect. Well, so we're going to go American League and National League West today, and in an effort to try to make this shorter, I'd love to keep this below 30 minutes for our listeners so we don't have listener fatigue. What I thought we could do is, instead of asking big questions about, you know, the biggest offseason trends in each division, et cetera, we'll just go team by team and do a quick over-under question, and then we'll kind of riff on that if we have specific thoughts on teams from there, roster construction, offseason moves, et cetera. Does that sound good to you guys?
Yep.
Perfect.
Okay, so let's kick that off then. We'll go American League West first, and we'll just go in order of the projections I'm looking at. I'm on fangraphs.com looking at the projected standings. We'll start with the Houston Astros, American League West. Last year, the winners of 101 games. This year projected by Fangraphs to be the winners of 100 games. Are you guys taking the over or the under on the Astros winning 100 games this season?
I'm taking the over. I like the Astros to win 101 games this year. Actually, of all 30 major league teams, they're the only team right now I'm projecting for 100 wins, I think, for a lot of different reasons that we can get into. You got to like the Astros walking into this season. I think they did exactly what they needed to in the offseason to shore up an already stout roster. Personally, I really like the addition of Gerrit Cole. I know he had a down 2015, 2016, and 2017, but I think he's going to give that rotation exactly what they need. Probably getting 190 innings pitched. I like what he's doing for the Astros. I hope there's not World Series fatigue, but I like him. I'm taking the over.
I'm going to take the under. I think that just the innings pitched for a team going to Game 7 of the World Series is always going to catch up to their pitchers a little bit the next year. We saw Cubs pitchers, you know, basically Lester, Hendricks, Arrieta all missed a couple months of the season last year, and especially with Verlander's age, he had some struggles before he turned it on last year. I don't know if I'd buy Gerrit Cole coming back as a star pitcher again. So I'm going to take the under, but only slightly. I think they still win like mid-90s to high-90s and win the division.
Hey, what do you guys think Justin Verlander is going to do? Speaking of that World Series fatigue, so he's age 35, always seems to throw 180 innings. Is that going to be a serious World Series fatigue this year? Or do you think he's going to be as stout as he's been in the past?
I don't really see any reason to think that we're going to see drop-off from Verlander. So, I mean, last year, looking at his stats from the Tigers and then at the end of the season and in the postseason, the Astros, he pitched 206 innings, was striking out more than an average of one per inning, walking just over 3 batters per 9. Not giving up too many home runs, had a really high left on base percentage, 79.7, leaving on base almost 80% of the batters who reached base. I mean, I see all good things from Verlander. ERA 3.36, pretty stellar there. 4.1 WAR on the season. I don't really see any reason to think that he's going to be declining. I mean, his ERA has been pretty steady over the last 3 seasons, hovering 3 to 3.5. He was a little bit weaker in 2014, but 2013, right at those numbers. He was really good in 11 and 12, but he's been pretty consistent since 2013. I don't really see reason to think that he's going to fall off after that. I don't know.
I see 2 reasons to disagree a little bit. One is that he's 35 years old, and that's around the time a lot of pitchers, especially historically guys who are power pitchers, tend to start falling off. And the second is that I think adding this up, I have him down for 242 2/3 innings last year, which is just like a really, really crazy high amount, especially for a 35-year-old. So I'm not saying he turns into, you know, a total pumpkin or something, but I don't think he's going to be a star this season. I think he's going to be a solid to decent starting pitcher and potentially will miss some time with injuries, just given the innings.
Historically, he hasn't missed much time with innings, though. I mean, since 2007 here are his innings pitched per season. I'll just round down to the nearest inning. 201, 201, 240, 224, 251, 238, 218, 206. And then in 2015, 133. So there's the one anomaly. Then 227, 206. So he has, I mean, historically, he's held up fine. I totally take your point about the age 35 season. Things can be a little bit different there. But I just don't see any objective reason to, other than, yeah, he's getting older, to think that he's going to have a seriously lower year performance-wise than last year.
I would kind of interpret that, the statistic you gave, kind of the opposite way, in the sense that, like, it's almost like there's only so many innings your arm can throw in a career. I don't really have any empirical evidence for this, but it seems like guys who have accumulated more innings for more years in their career might be more liable to break down faster as they age, rather than guys who have had like lighter workloads for a long time. Although, like I said, I can't really back that up.
Oh, I was going to say, so just on the topic of the Astros overall, so Justin Verlander, I think whether he declines or not, I think the biggest thing you guys got to look at is the depth of this rotation. You guys know I'm really high on both the Nationals and the Cubs rotations, but the Astros rotation is fantastic. I think you still have two more starters in this rotation who you could easily put in as an opening day starter, game one of the World Series starter, whatever you need, with Dallas Keuchel as well as Lance McCullers Jr. I think either of those guys could be number one starters in probably 25 of the 30 major league rotations. So,
McCullers had an ERA of 4.25 last year. He's not a number one starter on any team that's in contention.
So we're talking what, five realistic teams in contention based on the other two pods we've done on the major league. So not in the Indians, not in the Nationals, not in the Yankees, not in the Red Sox. What other rotation is he not a number one starter in?
Yeah,
he has a 4.25 ERA, and the year before that his WHIP was 1.54. Like, I don't see how you could be in contention with that as your number one starter.
But in defense of this McCullers point, though, I'm kind of on Pete's side with this, because his ERA is 4.25, but the better stat is the FIP, which basically strips out the defensive inconsistencies there. And his FIP was 3.1. His XFIP, which adjusts for park, is 3.17. So it's kind of an instance where you see the pitcher getting unlucky because he has a high BABIP, where, you know, the BABIP for McCullers last year was 330. So he's getting unlucky on a lot of the contact that hitters are making, and they're finding holes in the defense. And for that reason, his earned runs allowed is higher than it should be. So if his ERA catches up to his FIP, which should be the case this year, just because of regression to the mean, he'll look like a more like a starter. I mean, definitely a deserving starter in the Astros rotation. And I think somebody who could be a starter on, for example, the Rays staff, you know, there's no question about that. And even a number one starter.
And he's the number three starter in Houston. He's the number three starter. Give me a better number three starter.
You wouldn't put Keuchel, Verlander, and Cole ahead of him?
Yeah, that's fair. Probably with Gerrit Cole, I'd put him as number three. Okay, so he's the number four starter. I think that almost backs up my point even more. I was just factoring Gerrit Cole probably having a little fatigue if I'm going off the 2015 through 2017 Gerrit Cole. But like I said, Gerrit Cole is going to be a workhorse for them in that rotation. I'm just saying, top to bottom, this rotation is stout. I think we can all agree on that, whether these dudes are starting in other places as the number one starter or not.
I totally agree they're stout. Like, we're definitely splitting hairs.
Yeah.
I think I would have them as like the third or fourth best rotation after the Nats and Cubs and maybe another team that I'm forgetting. I don't think they're quite as dominant as I think you guys think they are, but we all agree they're extremely good.
Yeah, well, I mean, we should move on from the Astros here in a second, but I will just add that we haven't even talked about Forrest Whitley, who might be the best pitching prospect in baseball. He has yet to pitch in the majors, but in Double A last year, ERA 1.84, FIP of 1.68. This guy's good. He's going to be a name to watch. He may see some service time in the majors this season, and if he does, that's even more impressive depth to add to the starting rotation for the Astros. So I think it's going to be fun to watch. Okay, so moving on from the Astros, let's see. The next team in the AL West, the Angels. So currently projected by Fangraphs for 84 wins this season. Last year, the winners of 80 games. And of course, the big story with the Angels is the offseason activity. The biggest one was the Shohei Ohtani signing. But of course, they also added Zach Cozart on their infield. So what do you guys think about Angels? 84 wins over under on the 2018 season.
I'm definitely taking the over on these guys. Again, just like we've talked about in previous episodes with the unbalanced schedule, I think being the biggest factor that works against the top half of these divisions. I like the Angels not by a whole lot over 84 games, but I do like the Angels right now. I'm kind of looking at Ohtani stats coming out of spring training, and everyone is really down on him, it seems, which is hilarious since he was the biggest thing we talked about with the hot stove. I see him having probably a rough first 2 months in the bigs, just as he's kind of getting used to major league pitching versus the Japanese clubs overall. But I think he's going to come on just fine. I think this team, honestly, though, is really going to live and die on Justin Upton if he can lower that strikeout rate. Albert Pujols is going to hit 3,000 hits this year, and that's not going to carry a club enough. But I think if they can stay a little healthier than they have in years past, I think this club could be a heck of a lot better. Oh, and by the way, that guy, Mike Trout, I don't know what he's done ever, but I see him having a big year for the Angels as well.
I would love to take the over on this. I think it's like a crime that baseball is a sport where a historically great, one of the greatest players of all time, superstar, and Mike Trout can just miss the playoffs year after year after year and like never really get the casual fan credit he deserves. I feel like outside of baseball fans, I feel like people don't put Mike Trout in the same sentence as, you know, LeBron or Tom Brady or whatever. And that like really frustrates me because he's so awesome. So I would love for the Angels to succeed, but it's just hard for me to project how they win more than 84 games without like really enough high level pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with you, Ishan, and I'll go pretty significantly on the under. I think that actually the Angels will struggle to win half their games this year. And I would project that they'll win 80 games. So they'll be just under the 500 mark on the season. I mean, I liked a lot of the stuff they did. If Ohtani works out, that's a huge win for them, given the small salary they're paying him. I really like the Zach Cozart signing. I like the Kinsler signing. They obviously have Trout. So now they have Trout, Cozart, Kinsler, and Andrelton Simmons, who's probably the best defensive shortstop in baseball. But they also have some big holes in their lineup. I think Justin Upton, their left fielder, not that good. Cole Calhoun's actually pretty good. I'll give him that. Their first baseman, though, you mentioned Pujols, Pete. He's
yep.
been on the decline for a long time, and yeah, he'll probably reach 3,000 hits this year, but it'll take him a while to do that. He's not going to add to their offense significantly. He'll probably be a zero WAR player, probably slightly below replacement level. And their catcher, Martin Maldonado, I mean, he hit low 200s last year for average. So I think there's a lot of holes in this lineup, and their pitching staff is, I think, where it gets really problematic. Garrett Richards, their ace. And then after that, a lot of question marks. And I am not a believer in Ohtani at all. I was not sold on him when he first came over. I wasn't sure if all the hype was justified. And in spring training, that looks like, you know, I've been validated on that. Now, I mean, spring training, I know we can't read into it too much. And it could be that he emerges as, you know, a new Clayton Kershaw rival in Los Angeles there. But I am not at all confident that he'll do that, and I'm kind of bearish on the Angels prospects. So 80 games for me.
So if we're looking at a 3-4-5 lineup, though, I think that is kind of one of the unsung heroes of this Angels team and something to keep an eye on going forward. So you're looking at Mike Trout most likely batting third, then either Albert Pujols or Justin Upton. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to tweak that lineup. I haven't seen the final projection, but I mean, I think Justin Upton's going to get him 20 home runs, maybe 90 RBIs. I think this offense could be a lot more threatening than we're giving it credit for. So I totally agree on the rotation. Ohtani's been disappointing so far. It's going to be a rough first few months for him, but keep an eye on that rotation out there in the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim organization.
All right, well, let's move on to the Mariners. So, and I'll just kick off the discussion here. So I said I think the Angels will struggle to win half their games. I think the Mariners are the surprise pick to slide in the second spot in the AL West. And Jerry Rapoto, I think, is a savvy manager. He's done some good things in terms of offseason activity. My favorite thing, which I think we have to at least mention on this, is the signing of D. Gordon and moving D. Gordon to outfield. I've been a fan of D. Gordon's play for a long time, and watching him swipe bases is one of the most fun things. And I always like a contact hitter, too, because they're just fun to watch at the plate. And that's D. Gordon in a nutshell. But moving him to center, I think, could be a stroke of genius because he's super fast. And he adds a Byron Buxton like defensive element to the center field now for the Mariners. But I like the Mariners' chances here right now. They are projected by Fangraphs to win 80 games. I'm going to say that they win somewhere closer to the 83-84 range. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm going to take the under, but just by one or two games. I have them bottoming out at about a 500 season. A little more than you do, Zach. I totally agree. It's an exciting lineup. I'm excited. I don't really believe in this starting rotation right now. There's nothing that really stands out to me as the workhorse, the dude who's going to get me 18 wins right now, the back end of the bullpen who's going to get me those clutch saves when I need him to. Totally agree the offense is going to be there, but I'm just not believing in the starting pitching right now. So I have him sitting probably as a 500 ball club this year.
Okay. Ishan, what do you think?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I like the depth of their lineup. I feel like they have a lot of guys who can hurt you up and down. I totally agree. D. Gordon's going to be a big spark for them. Saw a highlight of him throwing someone out from center field in spring training a couple days ago. So, you know, he's getting used to the new position. But I think I'll differ a little bit from Pete in that I think that what James Paxton did last year, 156 strikeouts and 136 innings, ERA under 3, WHIP of 1.1. I think he's on his way to being one really good starting pitcher, potentially showing some more growth this year. But I just don't see the depth in that rotation. I think Felix Hernandez continuing to decline. There's some guys with like bits and pieces of potential here and there, but nothing that I feel like you can really count on.
I mean, last year they had 17 different starters in that rotation. So they haven't been set up for success here for a few years, so it's going to be interesting to see how they handle all that uncertainty and lack of experience on that rotation, I think.
Also, I didn't realize Paxton's 29 years old, so maybe not as much growth as I was projecting. But still, he's still a really good pitcher last year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you guys are right. The rotation is the biggest question mark on that team, and I could be eating my words come like August, September. But we'll see. Okay, so moving on now, let's go to the next team on the list, the Oakland Athletics. Last year, the winners of 75 games. This year, projected for significant improvement at 81. You guys taking the over or under? Ishan, we'll start with you.
Wait, why are they projected for improvement? What are their major offseason moves? I know they added Steven Piscotty. Jonathan Lucroy, is he new? I can't remember.
Yeah, Lucroy is new, and Piscotty is the big signing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Did they like get unlucky last year, or like did they have fewer wins than their? I mean, it looks like their run differential is negative 87, so that's not really suggesting. That's probably suggesting 75 wins is overperforming. So I guess I'm not really, and these aren't really like that exciting of names. So I guess I'm not really seeing the case for much improvement.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm taking the under here because I also don't see. I mean, the Piscotty I like. When I lived in St. Louis, I went to Cards games and I liked watching Piscotty play. I thought he was good, but he's not the kind of player who's going to give you 6 wins in the regular season. So Lucroy isn't either. The Rangers were happy when they got Lucroy, and then he crashed and burned in Texas and didn't do much of anything. So I am not optimistic for the Athletics.
Although a really important fact to keep in mind here is that I've taken classes with Steven Piscotty because he was an energy engineering major at Stanford.
Nice.
The same years I was there. So that you never know. That could be 6 wins right there.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so his stats last year with the Cardinals, 235 average, 342 on-base percentage, 367 slugging. WOBA was 313. His WRC plus, so a measure of wins created, adjusted, basically adjusted on a scale so that 100 is average, below 100 is below average. His WRC plus is 92, so that's not good. He's a bad base runner. He's a below average defensive player. Last year, 0.2 WAR. So not the kind of person you expect to turn your franchise around. I'm not really sure what the Athletics see in him that made them justify a $33.5 million contract over 6 years.
And he spent a lot of time in AAA with the Cardinals. The Cardinals really didn't seem to know what to do with him, even down the stretch in September when they were trying to make that run for the wild card. Steven Piscotty was not part of their their overall winning game plan, it looked
right.
like.
Yeah, I mean, they had their whole outfield jam problem in St. Louis for a while, so.
Yeah.
So, Pete, what do you think about the 81 win projection for Oakland?
I am really down on the Athletics. I don't know what it is this year. As I was looking at these lineups, I have them as number 5 in the division. I'm taking the under. I don't see it.
All right. Well, speaking of last place teams, my last place team that I have in this division is the Rangers. I'm not sure if we need to talk about this team a whole lot. They do not seem to be destined for much. The FanGraphs projection has the Rangers winning 80 games this year. I think that's generous given what the Rangers have on their roster. They didn't do much. They signed Mike Minor to a 3-year contract. They signed Doug Fister and they signed Tim Lincecum. So they're going after these guys who were sort of one hit wonders, or you know, had a good few years in the majors and then flamed out pretty badly. So Fister and Lincecum are now on their pitching staff, and you know, they're still bound to players like Renato Odor, who's on a 6-year, $49.5 million contract, but last year barely hit .204. So I do not see this team going places. Adrian Beltre is going to be a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer for sure. But he is, he's getting very old now, and I'm not sure he'll be able to contribute. Joey Gallo is an embodiment of the two true outcome. He strikes out or he hits home runs, and it's only one of those two things. He barely walks. So I'm not optimistic about this team either. I think they're almost definitely going to finish in last place in the division. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Zach, I'm in agreement. I've got him sitting as my number 4, but not by a whole lot. I think it'll be interesting to see what Bartolo Colon does at age 44. I mean, he's still averaging 5 innings per start, which will help that rotation that needs some help. Totally agree with you. I don't have any faith in Tim Lincecum. I mean, he hasn't done anything since 2016. This team almost seems like they're trying to reinvent themselves back to the 2010 and 2011 heydays. I mean, you look at still Elvis Andrews and Adrian Beltre, they're trying to hold down on it. No one, even in this lineup, except Nomar Mazara, has 600 plate appearances. You're just not getting the consistency out of this team that you'd be looking for at this point in where that franchise should be in order for them to really go forward. I kind of like Delano DeShields Jr. hitting leadoff. I think that could be something exciting in Texas, but otherwise, I don't have a lot of notable things for this team right now.
Okay, fair enough. Ishan?
Yeah, I don't have that much to add to that. I mean, I guess I will say Mazara, he's only 22 years old and he's considered kind of a top prospect, right? So could be some growth there. Is that right? Am I just making that up?
No, I think you're right.
Really? And the other thing worth noting is that, like, you know, the FanGraphs projections are a lot kinder to the bottom of the division here. Like, 80 wins is what the Rangers Mariners are projected, and 81 for the Athletics, whereas, like, the bottom teams and most of the other divisions are in the 65-70 range.
Right.
And so I think that's right. I think there's no team in this division that is, like, totally hopeless. I think everyone would need to get some surprise performances out of starting pitchers outside of the Astros, obviously. I think these other four teams would need to get some surprises from their starting pitchers, but sometimes starting pitchers surprise. Like, the year-to-year performance of starting pitching is, like, one of the most volatile outcomes in sports, I feel like. And so I could see the case more in this division for an unexpected, you know, not necessarily catching the Astros, but, like, wild card contender.
Yeah, I think that's,
whereas
I think
in
that's
a lot
right.
of the other divisions, the bottom, I think any of these five teams could plausibly win 88 games and make the playoffs, and I wouldn't be shocked. Whereas, like, in most of the other divisions, there's a couple teams who are, like, clearly hopeless.
Right. Yeah. Like the White Sox or the Rays. Okay, cool. Well, let's try to speed it up a little bit. I want to finish up here soon if we can. So let's kind of hurry up through the National League West. I'm not sure if we have a ton of things to say on the Dodgers. I know I don't. I will say FanGraphs projects them to win 93 games. To me, that sounds about right. They no longer have Yu Darvish. They no longer have Brandon Morrow. They've made some acquisitions, I think, trying to get under the luxury tax threshold, and they've sacrificed some players for that reason. But I think they've done so in part because they know they have a cushion in the division. There's no one who I see who will seriously contend with them for winning the National League West. So Dodgers, I'll say, right around 93 games, I'll say it's a push, over-under. But that's my thought on the Dodgers. What do you guys think?
I'm going to take the over just because this seems like a reload of the team we saw last year. I still, despite what happened in the World Series, think Kenley Jansen is actually the best closer in baseball year in and year out. Obviously a bad World Series for him. I've been really impressed by him. Matt Kemp, who they acquired in the offseason, down 40 pounds. Otherwise, I mean, you look at this starting rotation, you look at the infield led by Cody Bellinger. What don't you like about this Dodger team right now, I think is what I would ask anyone who isn't picking them to win this division easily. I think this division will produce a wild card team, and we can get that here in a second. But man, I'm really high on the Dodgers as well, which I know is the cliche and easy pick out of the division. I really like the Dodgers this year.
I'm going to go off the map and take the way under. I think the Dodgers are going to be the disappointing team of baseball this year and win high 80s. And I don't know if there's another team that's going to win in the 90s and win the division. We'll get to that in a minute. But I just think this is three straight years of deep playoff runs, NLCS, NLCS, Game 7 of the World Series. They lost Yu Darvish and didn't really replace him with anybody. And I've always kind of felt like their starting rotation was a little bit of smoke and mirrors after Kershaw. And you get rid of Darvish, you know, Rich Hill, what's he, like 63 years old now? Like, maybe he's going to be good again, but maybe not. Rich Hill was like a big prospect on the Cubs when I was in middle school. So it's like really incredible that he's still playing Major League Baseball. And then, you know, these other guys, Alex Wood's probably pretty good, but like, is he good for a number two starter? Maybe not great for a number two starter. And then, you know, who else is there? Like Brandon McCarthy, Kenta Maeda, like who is there that you're really counting on? I don't even know who they're planning to fill out the back of their rotation with, but I think they're going to be relying pretty heavily on that bullpen and offense, because I'm not sure that the post-Kershaw options. So I think, you know, suppose Kershaw misses another month or two with injury this year, I'm not confident the Dodgers can keep it together. So I'd say it's a bit of a risky pick. Obviously, everyone thinks the Dodgers are going to win a lot of games, but I'm going to say they win like 87.
Okay, I like it. Well, if they win 87, according to FanGraphs, lurking in the wings will be the Diamondbacks, who are projected right now to win 81 games, right at 500. Last year, the winners of 93 games. And to me, that the 81 projection sounds a little bit low. I think the Diamondbacks have a lot of good talent on this team. Now, they lost J.D. Martinez, the Red Sox's new replacement for David Ortiz. So they lost Martinez. They lost Chris Ionetta. Fernando Rodney's now with the Twins. But they signed Jerod Dyson. They signed Alex Avila. They signed they traded to get Steven Souza from the Rays. So I think they've made some good moves to offset some of those key losses. And I don't see, I mean, I see the core, the talent core in place for them to have another good season right around 84, 85, 86 wins. What do you think?
I'm going to call this one a push on 85. That's what I was scribbling over here a couple minutes ago on the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks honestly are going to live and die this year. I know he's only pitching once every 5 days. I think Zach Greinke and his season is going to be the best indicator of what the Diamondbacks do this year, more than anything else. So 17-7 last year, 3.20 ERA, a WAR of 6.4. Zach Greinke, I think, is still one of the best. I don't want to call him a magician, but I still think he fools guys despite his velocity declining every spring. I still think he fools hitters, unlike more than four or five other pitchers in the majors can do. I'm a big Zach Greinke fan. I think if he can have the kind of season that the Diamondbacks need him to have, they'll be great. But if Zach Greinke is stumbling here through April and May, it's going to be a rough season out there in Arizona. I like the rest of this Arizona team. I really do. I'm obviously a huge Paul Goldschmidt fan. I think he's probably the best all-around first baseman in the game right now. Overall, I like the Diamondbacks. I don't like them to really and truly compete with the Dodgers. And here's the hot take of the night from my seat. I have them sitting number third in the division, actually.
My hot take is that I think they're going to surprise people and win the division. I totally agree. Zach Greinke is the make or break player for them. You know, he still had great numbers last year. Strikeout, 215 strikeouts in 202 innings, 320 ERA, a whip just over one. But I think his fastball velocity has been declining a little, and it's not clear how much margin for error he has there, given that it wasn't that high to begin with. But what I really love about the Diamondbacks pitching staff is their rotation depth. Robbie Ray came on as a really, really good pitcher last year. 218 strikeouts in 162 innings, ERA under 3. Patrick Corbin's a really solid pitcher. And then when you have Zach Godley, a guy, former Cub prospect, who I really believe in, also had 165 strikeouts, 155 innings, and missing bats in some of those ballparks they play in the NL West, at Coors Field, and even in Arizona sometimes, it's a pretty important thing. They have a lot of, they have five guys who strike out at, or, you know, almost or over a batter per inning, which I know strikeout rate's a better stat, but this is just the one I have in front of me. And so with Zach Godley and Taijuan Walker as your 4 and 5 starters, I see that as a significant advantage over anybody else in the division. And a lot of teams really in baseball, just in terms of 1 through 5 in the rotation. So I think if the bullpen holds up, the lineup, you know, they're obviously JD Martinez being gone is a huge loss. And I'm not totally convinced how they make up for that. But one thing to look at is that AJ Pollock is, I think he's 2 years coming off of that, like, really serious. It was an elbow injury, right, that he had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That knocked him out for the season. And, like, I think elbow injuries are the kind of things where you could imagine a guy like really taking a couple years to get back to full strength. And he was like an all-star caliber player earlier in his career before that injury. So if he can get back up to that level, that'll help a little bit filling in the gap. So I think the Diamondbacks surprise people. I also just want to make like one unusual pick. I feel like we've been picking a lot of the favorites to win division. So I think the Diamondbacks win this division.
I like it. I like it a lot. Now, Pete, you said that they're going to come in third. So who's the team you have in second? Let's talk about them next.
You guys are going to eat me alive on this one, but I actually like the Giants, and I know they've had a bad spring training. I like what's going on in San Francisco. Obviously, Madison Bumgarner went down on March 24th with, I think it was a broken finger, so he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Jeff Samardzija's out. So the starting rotation, honestly, in San Francisco is in a bit of disarray right now. But first and foremost, it's an even year, and you know the Giants love to do something in even years, 2010, 2012, 2014. I like the pickups in the offseason of Andrew McCutchen and Longoria. I think that the Giants have done something that we don't see a lot of teams do, in that they're not totally rebuilding, they're retooling, which is a bold move because you're getting some older guys to come in and try to lead this club. But when you put those two guys to help shore up the outfield in the corners, and then you got Buster Posey, I think still the most consistent and all-around best catcher in baseball playing. I like Johnny Cueto. I think Hunter Pence is coming back this year. The roster kind of looks like it did in 2014, I think, instead of what I need in 2018. But I think the Giants are going to surprise people if that rotation can actually figure out what it's doing. I hate that Johnny Cueto has got to be their ace here in April and the first part of May. That could really backfire, and that could make me look like a really, really big idiot here for anyone playing this podcast in late May, early June. But if they can survive losing Mad Bum and Jeff Samardzija for these first few weeks, I like the Giants.
This is great. We got some real disagreement here.
Yeah, go ahead, Zach. I like this. I don't see the Giants coming in second in that division. I think I'm more sympathetic to Ishan's view of Diamondbacks Dodgers, but I don't really see a scenario in which the Giants sneak in ahead of the Diamondbacks, or in Ishan's scenario, if the Diamondbacks win, the Giants sneak ahead of the Dodgers. I think there's too much competition at the top there. And I mean, you know, your point about retooling, that works to me if you have a season in which you win 75 games and you can retool and get to 85. But the Giants last year were winners of 64 games, finishing dead last. Even behind the Padres last year. So 64 games, you can't just retool and then expect to be a contender at that point. And you can't have success when you're trading away prospects like they did when they traded Christian Arroyo away to get Evan Longoria. So I like Longoria. I don't like that move, though, because they're giving away their prospects and they're trading their long-term health for, you know, short-term mediocrity in this case, because Longoria was a great player in 2016. He's been a great player. 2017, he wasn't great. 2.5 WAR. His OPS went down over 100 points between 2016 and 2017. And so, like, that trade to me is a perfect example of what the Giants are doing wrong. Mark Melancon had a great year 2 years ago and then disappeared last year. So I see more of the same from the Giants. These players in decline. Great players like Hunter Pence, as a, you know, Phillies fan. I really love Pence, but he's also in decline. So I see a lot of these types of players on the Giants. I don't see them making a push for contention anytime soon.
Yeah, I totally agree. Not only were the Giants last in baseball, last in the division, they actually had the worst record in baseball and the third worst run differential. So I absolutely do not see them as a comeback contender. I actually have a basketball analogy for where I think the Giants are right now. I think with these Longoria and McCutchen moves, I kind of see them a lot as like the 2014 Brooklyn Nets, where like they still think they're going to be a contender, right, but they're actually not even close. And they give up young talent for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, who were MVP caliber players like 7 years ago.
Right.
And kind of have like filled out their roster with, like Pete was saying, dudes who were great in 2014 or even in some of these cases like 2011. And, you know, I just don't see where they're going to get the offense from. And I know that, you know, they have contact hitters, Span, Panic, Pence, guys who just like make contact and in that huge ballpark find their way around the bases. So they can sort of overperform their talent in ways like that. But still, like last year, they got 500 at-bats from Buster Posey, which is always tough to do out of a catcher. And they still didn't even score 4 runs per game. Only they and the Padres scored under 4 runs per game. So it's just, it's, yeah. So I think the Giants come in fourth or fifth in that division and don't come close to winning half their games.
I thought the NBA comparison you were going to make was the 2017-18 current season Detroit Pistons who traded for Blake Griffin.
That was actually the second one that I had in my head.
Okay, nice. All right, so let's real quick talk about the Rockies and then the Padres. So Rockies projected at 80 games. To me, that sounds about right as well. I don't have a whole lot of interesting things to say on the Rockies. I think they won't be a very interesting team to watch this year, but what do you guys think?
Ooh, that's harsh. Won't be a very interesting team to watch.
I love Arenado. He's probably my favorite. Well, I don't know about my favorite, but one of my favorite players in baseball. Defensively, so much fun to watch. Offensively, so much fun to watch. I mean, there's Blackman as well. I take it back. There are interesting things to watch on this team, but I don't think that the team, you know, writ large, the team as a whole is going to be interesting to watch in terms of the ups and downs of the season because they have interesting players, but they're in a competitive division, and I don't see them making a push for contention.
What do you guys think the addition of Wade Davis is going to do to the Rockies? So obviously the Rockies had a much better year than we expected last year, ran into the Diamondbacks here in that wild card game, kind of fell apart there at the end of that game, needed a closer, brought in Wade Davis. I mean, what do you guys think he's going to do, especially pitching there in Coors Field, potentially 50-60 games a year?
Yeah, I just see Wade Davis as the Greg Holland replacement. So I think it's basically a wash.
I think, you know, I watched a lot of Wade Davis last year, and his walk rate kind of crept up to some dangerous places. And he was kind of like, it was a little bit of smoke and mirrors walking the tightrope that second half of the season. So I'm not totally certain he's the star closer that his sort of main numbers make him look like right now. But I do think that when you take the bullpen as a whole, if Wade Davis is a star again, they're doing something really interesting in Colorado, which is collecting really great back-end relievers with him and Brian Shaw, also of Jake McGee, also of you know, some other guys who have performed at high levels in the past, like Adam Ottavino and Mike Dunn. And so I think it's kind of a different thing. You know, it's hard to get starting pitchers who maintain their confidence or want to come to Colorado. And so maybe they build out the back of their bullpen and win a lot of tight, close games where they have the lead that way. So I think it'll be interesting to monitor. You know, they just have so much talent on offense and a ballpark that really accentuates it. So I think they'll play a lot of fun games, and I think they'll win more than half their games by a little, like 83 to 85 win range.
Yeah. I think Davis is due for some regression this year because Davis last year, his velo was down a little bit across pretty much all his pitches, and it was down to basically 2013 levels. And in 2013, he had a 5.3 ERA with a 4.18 whip. So I think he's due for some regression, and I think he's not going to be doing for the Rockies what he did for the 2016 Royals or even last year's Cubs.
I like your point, Ishan, about what they're doing with the back end of that bullpen. I totally agree with all your points about how they're kind of going to rise and fall with how that bullpen does. But I like the addition of Brian Shaw, who led the American League in appearances in 3 of the 4 last year. So, I mean, he's got, what is it, about a 3.1 ERA, 3.52 FIP. I like Jake McGee. I like the point you made about it's overall the bullpen. I don't think Wade Davis is going to single-handedly save this team from some of the issues they had last year, but I think they are absolutely moving in the right direction in terms of what they need to do overall as a ball club.
The last important thing we need to say about the Rockies is that you should ballpark adjust Nolan Arenado's statistics when comparing
yes.
to Chris Bryant.
Yes, you definitely need to. And I did that. I wrote a piece earlier this year on medium.com/thirdstring where I compared the best third baseman in baseball, and Chris Bryant came out far and away the best, because once you adjust for the park factors in Arenado's case, it's not close.
That is, you know, such a good take, Zach, that you're that's a first string take right there.
Perfect. All right. Final team we're going to talk about today. Let's talk about the Padres. And What I'll say about the Padres here, they're projected by Fangraphs to win 71 games, which would be matching their performance from last year. And I should mention that that performance from last year significantly overperformed expectations given their negative 212 run differential, which is like almost comically bad, by far the worst in baseball. But they still managed to win 71 games and be significantly ahead of the Giants for the second to last place in the division. But the Padres this year, they're not going to be close to contention, I don't think. I don't think anybody's saying that they will be. But I think they'll be a lot of fun to watch because they have some really young talent. Now, I don't agree with the Eric Hosmer signing. To me, that doesn't make sense. It's kind of like the Arrieta signing in Philly. If you're rebuilding and you know you're rebuilding, why are you going to throw a lot of money at a good, not great player? So I don't like the Hosmer signing, but I like Freddie Galvez, their shortstop. I like Chase Headley. I like Will Myers. And I also like some of their guys in their farm system. Fernando Tatis Jr., who's a shortstop coming up, gotten a lot of Manny Machado comps. And then they have another guy, Luis Urias, who is also a middle infielder, probably going to be a second baseman when he comes up into the majors for the Padres. And this guy just does not strike out. You look at his minor league stats so far in A and double A ball, and he's striking out like single digit percentages and just getting on base a ton. And Tatis is a shortstop with power, hence the Machado comp. So I like what the Padres are doing as far as rebuilding. To me, they're like the White Sox of the National League West in that they have all this young talent. They're making smart moves, building for the future. And in like 2019, 2020, they're going to be a team to watch and potentially the team to beat. So that's what I'll say about the Padres. I think 71 games is, I'm bullish on them. I'll take the over. I'll say 73 to 74 wins for the Padres this year. What do you guys think?
I am not as down on the Eric Hosmer deal as you are, Zach. I think they overpaid a little for him. I think the way that the market was shaping up, I think the Padres felt like they had to do something. But I was reading some interviews with some former teammates of Eric Hosmer here over the last few days. And a lot of people say that he is really, really good for a locker room. Obviously, not an area of my expertise. We might need to get someone with actual experience on the pod to talk about that more. But people think that he has been very good for rebuilding teams, and he has a great overall presence, and he's a good offensive bat. So I totally agree with you on the projections with 2019-2020. I'm not as bullish on the Padres as you were. What I want to see out of the Padres, full strikeout ratio that they've got. I mean, he's got almost 650 plate appearances last year, with almost 30% strikes thrown. I need to see Will Myers do something, show a little more discipline, show a little more maturity at the plate. I think when you pair that, again, with the projections of 2019-2020, some maturity this year, totally agree with you that the Padres could be dangerous here in 19 and 20.
I don't know anything about the Padres. I'm just furiously Googling all these dudes, trying to figure out who they are. There's someone named Brian Mitchell who Fangraphs has as a 2.5 win pitcher, and an ERA and a FIP under 4, but he's never really done anything like that in the majors or the minors. So I got distracted trying to figure out who this guy is and why Fangraphs likes him so much.
Well, but, you should definitely check out Luis Urias, who's a Mexican player in the Padres farm system. I think he's at double A now. He's cool. His stat lines look great. He's
what?
Really young.
97? Are you kidding me?
I think he feels super old, but I think he's the real deal.
He can't even drink yet.
Super excited about for not. Yeah. No. Yeah. I know, right? Crazy. Although he's from Mexico, he can drink in Mexico. So.
Also, Tatis Jr. That just makes me sad because he used to be in the White Sox system.
I know.
I think he was part of the James Shields trade.
There, he was. He definitely was. There's a lot to be excited though. For the White Sox, the Shields trade didn't work out, but I think that the White Sox have a bright future. I'm really excited for them.
I agree, but imagine how great it would be if they also had Tatis still in their system.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, guys,
speaking of Chicago, after baseball, can we do 30 seconds about the fact that Chicago has a Final Four team?
Let's do it right now.
I don't really know what to say. It's just jaw dropping and awesome because men's professional basketball team in Chicago is such a trash fest. Gutter fire, whatever, something like that.
Dumpster fire.
Bulls are terrible. Loyola Chicago is awesome. They are just such an incredibly well-coached team. Like, their defensive rotations are just so perfectly in sync. They just all pass and cut and move and shoot on offense. And, you know, they don't really have one guy who can create offense for himself. So it's like really amazing to watch them possession after possession find a way to create a high-value shot. It's really like, this has just been a coaching clinic, I think. more than anything else. And also just a ton of fun to watch. Very excited about watching them again this weekend. And also there's three other teams in the Final Four, but I don't even remember who they are or care. All that matters is Chicago.
Well, I'm all aboard the Loyola Chicago bandwagon at this point. I think you've got to be. When an 11 seed makes the Final Four, you've got to be cheering for the upsets all the way. So I'm
also like
I'm on
a
board.
True small conference 11 seed, not like a Syracuse who had a mediocre season in the ACC 11 seed.
Right. Yeah. No, totally. I mean, no one expected this. I saw the stat that of the 17 million brackets submitted through ESPN's tournament challenge, there were 500 or so that correctly predicted the Final Four teams, which is amazing. No one saw this coming. It's crazy. All right. Well, that's all we have for Third String this week. We're going to try to release an episode later this week with Saw LaMonica, who was on with us previously to talk football. We're going to try to talk Final Four. We'll try to get that out before the tournament this weekend. Hopefully we will. So come back and listen to us for that. In the meantime, enjoy opening day. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach Crippen. You can follow Ishan at Ishan_Nath. And you can follow Pete at Pete_Lead. Until next time, thanks for listening to Third String.